You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Legendary guitarist and contemporary blues artist Bobby Misano has released 7 solo CDs and played on 50 major label and indie albums in his career. In 2015, he received the Hollywood Music and Media Award. In 2012, he was the Delaware Blues Hall of Fame inductee. And in 2015, he had a number one Billboard Blues album. It's my honor to have Bobby on the program for this edition of Americana Music Profiles.
Hi, Bobby. Welcome to the podcast today.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Absolutely good, man. It's so good to talk to you, and glad that we could make it work. You're in Colorado, is that right?
Yeah, I'm in Fort Collins, Colorado. You're looking at mountains right now. Okay. Actually, looking at mountains and a Budweiser plant.
Well, the mountains part's cool, and I guess the Budweiser part's cool, too, depending on what time of the day it is, right?
Well, I don't drink.
Oh, all right. Well, never mind.
At least I don't drink Budweiser. If it was a Pinot Noir plant here.
Yeah, right now, okay. Yeah, cool. So, it's good to get a chance to talk to you. I've been reading some of the liner notes and catching up on some of the videos, and you've been at this a long time.
Oh, Lord, I have been. It's been, I think it's 43rd year in the business.
Okay, wow.
So, yeah.
Was this something that started for you as a youngster in high school, college, or
No, you know, it started when I was a kid, because when I was in high school, I mean, I was already playing, and when I was 14, I was actually playing in clubs with like guys that were like 25 and 28 and stuff, and my goal was at that particular point to be, and I'm trying to write my memoirs. It's just taking forever.
Yeah, okay.
And I have too many stories, but I wanted to be Eric Clapton, and I wanted to play the Fillmore East.
Okay.
And I never got to do either.
Yeah, wow. Well, it's not too late, right?
No, I wrote for Clapton, but the Fillmore East is gone, so I mean...
Right, yeah, that's true, yeah. So, you... I noticed that you have been able to collaborate with a lot of different folks, as well as your own solo career. Is there, I know this probably is a loaded question, but is there, or what is the difference? Is it a noticeable difference? Do you prefer one or the other?
That's actually a really good question, because, I mean, I was, when I was growing up playing as a kid, I sang lead, and I was a guitar player. And when I joined my first album band, I turned into a side man, mm-hmm. Even though I was an integral part of it.
Right.
And it was interesting, because I went from literally being the guy that was there singing and playing to being, I call it the guys in the trenches, the musicians in the trenches.
Sure, yeah.
And the interesting thing is that it took a lot of pressure off to just be the guitar player.
Sure, yeah.
But by the same token, I wasn't able to do as much creating of music of my own. So, I mean, I really liked that, and I was always really good in that spot. But... at some point I had to change it over and like do it for myself, because I really truly wanted to be incredibly broke.
Was there a moment or a season where you either kind of had to make that choice, or you knew if you didn't break into your solo career, it wouldn't happen?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was, because, I mean, if you look at the career, it was, I've always been I've been just a player. So, I played a lot of acoustic guitar. I played a lot of electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And I was like one of those guitar hero, quote unquote, kind of people.
Right.
But I didn't do as much writing, because I was, playing with other writers and other people that were, I thought were better writers than I did, than I was. But, and I played with, hard rock people, and I played with Steve Winwood. So,
right.
And I played with Gloria Gaynor. So,
right, yeah.
So it's like I was just a player. and whatever was there that I could play and play well, I did. But yeah, it was sort of like this epiphany at one point. I had done a tour of Germany in 1990. Actually, I had done my solo album in 1989, and it was a rock solo album, and it was very well received. Mm-hmm. But it did not, you know, it charted. It just, you know, it was on MTV. But it, you know, I was sort of getting at the back end of why am I playing, as much as it was fun, why am I playing like hard rock stuff when I'm not like super, you know, as comfortable? But I just wanted to do something that had more depth.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. I came back from Germany in 1990 and had this epiphany and said, you know, I want to go back to playing contemporary blues and more stuff like that. And like, you know, that band Stanky Brown that I was in were, for all intents and purposes, an Americana band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they were like Firefall.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, and that's where I wanted to go, but I also was, I grew up playing, you know, blues. I mean, right. You know, Freddie King and stuff. So I just made that choice and went, it's now time, I have to do this. And that's what I did in 1990, actually, yes.
And kind of fast forward a bit, you're one of the reasons why we're talking today is the new record, Lemonade, and if I think I read it right, it's the ninth for you, solo? Is that right?
I think if I add my Masano record, it's the ninth, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And feeling more kind of Americana blues, am I reading that right?
Yeah, it is, because it's you know, I mean, there's a lot of Cajun feel on it, and I mean, the other ones, you know, all my records have, it's not straight ahead blues. There's always the big rock guitar blues, you know.
Right, right.
And two albums ago, Love and Money went number one on the Billboard blues charts. I actually knocked Samantha Fish out.
Hmm.
And who's my buddy? Sorry, Sam. But, you know, I was on it for 8 weeks in the top 10. And, you know, I always incorporate acoustics. I always incorporate dobros. And I'm very song-oriented, and I write songs about my life, and I try to... I'm pretty funny, so I try to sort of make them comedic sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But this one... Bad Movie was the last one, which was a really phenomenal record. I mean, John Tiven wrote all the songs with me. Brian May, who's a friend of mine, wrote one song for it. And Steve Kalinich, who was with the Beach Boys, did one. And Larry Weiss, who wrote Rhinestone Cowboy. And,
right.
And Ben Meshatley did one song. Really good. It was a 15-song CD. It was really good. This one... actually started as, this is actually, it was a mistake, because I wasn't supposed to actually do this record. It was another artist that I was producing with Joe Baby Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
And she did not show up for the record.
Oh, wow.
There were some, well, there were problems
yeah.
in her family.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, and it sort of messed it up, and I had to write a record very quickly.
Okay.
I mean, I'm saying in 48 hours.
Wow. Wow.
And I had two songs that she and I had co-written that were going to be on, and I knew. And then I wrote the rest of it in 48 hours and showed up in Louisiana, not quite knowing what I had.
Wow.
And it just is magical, because Dockside Studios, where we recorded it in Maurice, up by Lafayette, was incredible. I mean, you know, Bob Malone flew in from L.A., and, you know, all these guys were in to do the other record, but we ended up doing mine, and you know, Malone and I are both from New Jersey, we're both funny, and we're both, you know, blues. I mean, he plays with John Fogerty and Ringo, and, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just, it's just amazing. Doug Belote on drums from Ricky Lee Jones, and Clapton, and Cindy Landreth, and, you know, Carl Dufresne from North Mississippi All-Stars, and Andrews Osborne. I mean, this turned into a magical record, and it was, Joe was trying to get me to spread my wings a little bit, and be a little more jam bandy, Americana-y self, you know, not,
right.
instead of just a little bit more of the box. And plus, you know, I had done a lot of dance records in New York with Nile Rodgers, and I were doing a lot of dance records.
Okay.
So I ended up with cool funk stuff and second line stuff. And
yeah.
I mean, and it ends with an extraordinary version of Find the Cost of Freedom by Corus Pistols and Nash.
Right, yeah.
And it's just, that's where it went. It's a beautiful record, I think, you know. And I do say, we always say our records are great when we make them because you have to, because you don't want to put it out if it's
sure,
not good.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
Now, I'm very careful to put really great records out that sound like they cost $15 million. And this one is great.
Now, when you said you had to write this in 48 hours and you show up in the studio, with how complete are they in 48 hours? Do you just have melodies and a few words, or did you have, you know, half a dozen or a dozen songs ready to go?
No, I had about 10 songs ready, but they were only choruses, and, you know, that's the way I write anyway.
Uh-huh.
So I was still writing lyrics in the studio. I knew what they were going to be about.
Yeah.
And I was still writing arrangements.
Okay.
But I literally walked in, and they had found out about it the night before. And they said, and I walked in, and they went, "What do you have?"
Yeah, okay.
And I picked my phone up, and I put it on the microphone. And I said, "Why don't we start with this one?"
Yeah,
you know, it was a song called "Black and White."
Wow.
And it turned out phenomenal. And plus, you know, when you're working with musicians like that,
sure, yeah,
you know, that's what we're supposed to do. You walk in and you create something that's amazing,
yeah,
and you get a camaraderie up really quickly. And that's what happened. We did. I mean, and I record really quick, and we do everything really quick. This entire record, from setup to mastering, is about 68 hours.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Yes.
That's
and
fast,
Dave Glasser, man. You know, David Glasser, who does the Grateful Dead stuff, and he masters that stuff. He got through the fourth song and looked at us and went, "Oh my God, this is one of the best records I've ever heard." And I went, "Oh my God, coming from you."
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The team was extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, it certainly speaks to your team and your years as a musician and having all of that experience to draw on. You know, it's just so many artists would probably dream of being
crumble.
Able to create a record like that.
I mean, that's what I always go. People go, "Well, you know, wow, you play." You know, 'cause I lived in Tennessee for a long time. You play really good. You rap really good. And I would go, at this age, if you gave a chimpanzee a ream of paper and a typewriter, they'd write the great American novel. Right. I better do something right.
So what is a day in the life of Bobby look like for you as a, you know, a seasoned musician and you know, getting ready to release your new record and all that kind of stuff?
Please, we know what this is like. I you know, my maid wakes me up in the morning and makes me eggs Benedict.
Right.
And then I go to the Lamborghini and drive two blocks down to the mailbox and
yeah.
Come back and say, which plane should we take today?
There you go, right. Yeah. Are we talking about blues and acoustic music or pop?
No, we're talking about Eric and his island in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
You know? No, it's actually pretty boring, you know. I mean, I do more business than I do anything else. I mean, it's so true, that Jackson Brown song, "The Loadout," you know, the only time that seems too short is the time that we get to play.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because most of it is, you know, especially these days in social media land and, you know, having to do a lot of things on your own, it's, you know, you work, you know, if I'm doing European stuff, I'm up at 5 a.m. you know, working until 12 at night, just doing that stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, I've got a boring day, but I'm a good cook.
Yeah. What have you, starting in the 70s and being an active musician through all these years, obviously there's been tremendous changes in the musical industry. Do you, you just kind of have to roll with it? Do you wish it was like it was? Are you more content with the way it is?
See, it's different. I mean, and right now, apologies for the cough.
That's okay.
I mean, you know, I'm now on a Warner Brothers distributed label for the first time. That I'm on a major label distributed label in years. you know, I was on Ichiban, that was EMI, and they were a big label at the time. And, you know, the difference, there are things that I do miss about the old, quote-unquote, evil corporate structure, which is that they got you radio play. I mean, you didn't have to worry about getting indies to do it.
Right.
If you wanted to go on the road, yeah, you were going to owe it, but they were going to throw you on a bus and put you out there to go play.
Right.
And you didn't have to worry about those upfront costs.
Right.
Now you do. And it's very difficult going out and playing. And I do acoustic solo shows. I do duo shows. I do band three-piece. I do band four-piece. And it's really expensive, and venues are closing left and right.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
so it's completely different. You know, I mean, I am radio-wise, I'm always eternally grateful for Sirius XM because, you know, people don't really realize that they pay really great money, and I'm always on it.
Yeah.
And that's something that you just hold on to for dear life, like endorsements.
Right.
So, yeah it's changed a lot. You know, I mean, like I'm going to the NAMM show next week in Nashville, you know, and I have endorsements and I go every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to Anaheim. But I see YouTube stars and I go, what is a YouTube star? Even though I know what a YouTube star is.
Right.
I'll walk up to them and I'll go, have you ever done any touring or your dates? And they're like, well, no, I play in my basement.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, all right, so you've never like been in front of 100 or 200 or 10,000 or 50,000 or 100,000 people? No.
Yeah.
Wow, what would you do?
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, gone are those days, I'm afraid, and certainly I'm old enough to have experienced the audience side of those shows, and I sure do. You know, obviously, they're still going on out there, but not the way that you grew up in the 70s and 80s and, you know, enjoying those things. And so,
yeah, I mean, there was, you know, you could go out to shows, and I always tell people that what I do, especially after this long of a career, there is nothing that can compare. It's like, you know, the movie Almost Famous is one of my, probably, yeah, that and It's a Wonderful Life is my favorite movie.
Hmm.
Almost Famous is my second.
Yeah.
You know, and I love Cameron Crowe anyway, so I think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
But that was so real to me because that's when I came into the business.
Right.
You know, when the Riot House was there in L.A. and Swingos in Cleveland. And I tell people 99% of the entire world, probably from the beginning of time, will never know what it's like to walk up those metal stairs and get onto that stage in front of 20 or 30 or 50 or 250,000 people.
They
don't know what that is, that's like.
Yeah.
And you never forget that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because it's extraordinary. It's just amazing, the energy. Even if they hate you, you know, get off the stage, you know, Tim McGraw, Rush, you know, whoever it is. Even if they hate you, the energy is amazing. And if you can win them over by the end of your show, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like being in this incredible battle that's a happy one and you won.
Yeah. You know? That's a cool way to look at that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I said, it's funny because I went to Red Rocks last 2 weeks ago to see John Fogerty with Malone. You know, it was sold out. In fact, it was oversold. And, you know, and I was watching that, and they had all the, you know, they had a $500,000 screen behind them, and I'm watching Bob with his top hat playing his organ solo, and I'm like, oh, you bastard. I remember what that was like.
Yeah, right.
Like, damn it.
Are there still things on your music career bucket list that you want to do?
Well, yeah. I mean, I want to continue playing. I want to see what happens with this record because it's really great. There's a lot that can happen with this, and the shelf life now is not, you know, your 8 weeks. You know.
Yeah. So right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you know, but it lasts a year or 2 years now. So I'm going to see what this does. But, you know, I'm going into more production. and writing and, you know, just doing more things like that. And, you know, I wouldn't mind, I don't want to say retiring, but I wouldn't mind in a couple of years just laying back a little bit and doing more production, you know, which I'm doing anyway. So, you know, I've probably produced, you know, 12 albums. So
yeah, okay.
It would be sort of nice to go back into that and just be in the studio a lot and then go on a beach and, you know, later.
So the new record is Lemonade. The press material says release date July 12th, right?
Yeah, that's Friday. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Tour planned? Will you take it on the road for a bit, or what does that look like?
Yeah, we're going to be doing some shows. We're going to, you know, we're waiting a little bit. I was supposed to do Europe in September, but I think that's going to be later. I did it last October. Bob Malone and I are doing, we don't know if we're calling it B&B or M&M, but we're doing these shows with the two of us when he gets back from Fogarty. We did one already at the Funky Biscuit in Boca Raton, Florida, about 2 months ago, and it was great.
Yeah.
So we're doing the Northeast. I know in October I've got a short tour in the Midwest. Then I'm gonna come back to Colorado, and then I'm flying it out to the Northeast, and we're doing probably 5 to 7 shows. There's 3 already booked. The Sellersville Theater, the Falcon, and Debonair Music Hall with the two of us. So, and then we'll just, you know, I do want to play. I mean, I'm headlining a festival in Jamaica in January. I did it this year, and, you know, I do want to go play. I just want to, you know, the whole idea is, I mean, I've gotten into a comfort level that I just don't want to, you know, when you get to a certain point.
Right.
You don't stay in red roofs, you know, you stay in, you know, Hilton's or Country Inns and Suites or something.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
And I won't go out if I'm not going to be able to do that, because after doing it for this long, if you can't be comfortable and safe and happy and you know, and rested, then what's the point of doing
sure.
it?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, but, I'm going to continue playing. My shows are, and that's the other thing, my show's like 3-4 hours long a lot. You know, I'll open with an hour and a half acoustic show, and then do electric. And,
okay.
And I was just in a car accident, so my knees were really messed up, and, you know, both knees have tears in my meniscus.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, it's a bummer, so I can't really jump off risers. And
right, yeah. No more flying from ropes and landing in the scaffolding somewhere.
I know. I did a show 2 weeks ago on my birthday in Denver at this little club that I love, and they just, you know, the Blues Society and all these people came out for it. And I was playing, it was just a really great show, and I went out to jump, and my drummer went, no! And it was like slow motion going, oh my God, as I'm coming down on my knee, you know?
Yeah, oh my, wow. So the website is bobmisano.com, right?
Yes, sir. Yep.
And folks can reach out to you there. The record will be, I'm assuming, available on all the regular channels on social media.
Yeah, it's on Spotify already. It's on iTunes already. Okay. It's on everything already. The label is Fish Head.
Okay.
Out of Cleveland. It's part of the Tragic Hero label group. It's distributed by Warner Brothers. And the video, Lemonade, just... I think I can say it because this will probably be out later, but it debuts on Heartland TV on Friday.
Oh, great.
At 2 o'clock. And then it's going to be on Next Stop Nashville, and then it's also going to be on My Jam TV, which is like 211 million worldwide.
Yeah, awesome.
So, and the video is great. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it's freaking
I haven't seen it yet. I listened to the song. I love the song. Yeah, I'll have to go.
Oh, isn't it great? Isn't it great?
I love
it. It's like, you know, that Hit Me, Baby, Hit Me part. I have people singing that.
Yeah,
now,
that's great. Well, it definitely sounds like it could be one of the ones that lingers for a while, so that's awesome.
Oh, I know. It's great. Yeah, I love that. I'm so happy about it.
Yeah,
so.
Good. Well, thank you, Bobby. This has been a treat. I've been looking forward to talking to you since we set this up, and so I wish you the best
great.
With it.
Greg, thanks so much. And I apologize, folks, about my tickle in my throat. I'm eating cough drops and drinking water, but, you know, I'm an allergy-driven bugger. So,
yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
Well, Greg, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thank you, too, and wish you the best, and hopefully we'll catch one of your shows here before you get done with this record.
That'd be great, my brother. I appreciate that.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.